Welcome, I'm Matt Gren. Today we have on our session Zuka Kakabadze, who is the CTO of a new company, Fugo. We are working together since a few months on a great project that I would love to disclose as much as I can, but I think best if I pass the voice to Zuka. So Zuka.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matt. So I think we're not really hiding much, but just to explain in a few words, we are building a software that tries to democratize digital signage industry. This software is called Fugo. Previously, this was called PixelArt. And basically, it allows businesses to manage networks of screens centrally. And this kind of software is referred to as, in the industry, it's digital signage content management software, CMS for short. And basically what it does is that it allows users not only to publish content on their screens, but to monitor the screens and also measure the effectiveness of the content they publish on the screens. Most importantly, what we're trying to do now is that we want to not only manage professional hardware that's available on the market, but we are also integrating consumer-grade hardware such as Amazon Fire TV sticks, Raspberry Pis, and Google Chromebit, and there's a myriad of devices out there, cheap devices that businesses can now use using our software. An interesting fact about our project is that we actually launched this software over a year ago now, but then we decided to rebuild it from scratch. And if you want, I can go into details how we come about to this decision. And it was a crazy decision, but I'm quite proud of it.
Yeah, we'll definitely go down that road, because actually that's one of the main topics for today. Still just going back to the business side of it, and why you picked that niche, that market? What was the reason, you know, why this particular business?
I think we were working on a project, and we didn't even know that this industry existed, but one of our clients asked us to write a software that pretty much does the same thing, and our first instinct was, okay, let's go to the market, see what's available, maybe we can just give this software to our clients instead. But having researched the industry, it was obvious that there was a big niche that has not been addressed. All the software that exists right now, and well, it was when we started this project, was 10, 20-year-old software with ugly user interface, written in C++, and it was extremely expensive. And if you wanted to, as a business, use this software, the vendors of this software, they would send you a team of trainers, and they would conduct 2-week training courses how to use their software, which was, I thought it was crazy. And that's how we came about building this software, because it was obvious that small businesses, if you even today when you go inside in a shop, you'll see a screen. The way people put stuff on the screen is usually a USB stick. They'll plug a USB stick inside, or they'll like connect their desktop to the screen and manage content via that way. Which is a very bad thing to do. This leads to a lot of dead screen. So it's not uncommon to see black screens inside the shops or businesses or offices, just because of badly designed networks with no software.
I understand. And you mentioned when you expressed the software you are building, that you also measure the efficiency of the content that you present on it, right?
Yes. So
how you measure? Yes. How do you measure that?
So the idea is to somehow engage the customer when they're in front of the screen. And there are different technologies like cameras and gate monitoring and infrared sensors, etc. Mm-hmm. So we want to, we do have MVP that does that, but we want to have, and this technology has existed for some time now, and many companies have it. They will install a camera, and camera will detect the person and how long they've been interacting with the screen or watching it. So this is not a new technology. But what we're trying to do is to make sure that this technology is accessible and it's cheap, so that you can roll it out to hundreds of locations. And yeah, that's pretty much, I think, answers your question.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you. So you started working with us mainly, I guess, because we are a Scala-based company, right? So there is main tagline that is for Scala is that we are having Scala experts. And we started a few years ago, and then, as you mentioned, you decided to rewrite the project. So it would be great if you could just tell us a bit the story. What was the challenge that you decided to change actually your whole technology stack, and what do you choose now for the new version of your software?
Yeah, absolutely. So initially we launched like an MVP, and it had a lot of test features. And the main goal of that software was to collect feedback from the users and monitor them as much as possible. Our MVP was also like a mishmash of different technologies. And it was not just, we were also testing these technologies and trying to learn them as well. And this gave us an ability to learn not only what we wanted to build, but also how we wanted to build it. And that's why we decided that, okay, now it's, we know as much as we can learn now, let's build everything from scratch. And that's when we decided to sort of choose Scala and sort of go with experts in this industry, such as Scala.
And Scala, of course, is one of the languages that you could pick. And I guess there are some business reasons why you picked that particular language for this particular project, right? Because, you know, there are many different ways to do things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, it came down to Haskell versus Scala.
Oh.
But from startup's perspective, we thought that for our domain, Scala was more appropriate. So there are a few reasons for this. Obviously, JVM infrastructure allows you to reuse a lot of existing libraries and frameworks.
Yes.
And for startup, this is very important because time to market is very short. Also, Scala is a very powerful functional programming language. And we really wanted to go for functional programming because of its, you know, Scala has a stroke type system, and these functional programming libraries are very mature. So this was the kind of two main reasons why we went for Scala.
Okay, so the ecosystem of libraries and frameworks is mature. JVM itself, it's really a mature platform on which you can build a lot of systems, and many businesses already are running on it. And the benefits of functional programming language, right?
Absolutely.
And we have still not enough. It's still not enough, because you went even riskier, I think, right? And you picked Zio.
Exactly. So then when you come to Scala functional programming ecosystem, there are so many choices. There are more mature libraries than others, so yeah, we decided to go with Zio, which is not even version one.
Yeah,
the stage, which was kind of really hard to convince my well, first of all, my dev team and then business team. I think we played around with Zia quite a lot, and we were quite impressed. Even though it's not as we don't have stable versions of the Zio and the surrounding ecosystem, it works surprisingly well. Even if you take, for instance, Haskell ecosystem, most of the libraries are not version one, but they work really well. And the reason for that is that these technologies are, and mainly functional programming technologies, are based on fundamental mathematical principles that guarantee correctness. So the stable version is not important anymore.
I get it. Stable version means basically that it has all features that you need in a 1.0 version.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you can still use it when it's lower version, because there are some subset of features that already are working correctly, and you might not need the other ones that will probably come into 1.0, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But
still, it's pretty brave, I must say. When I talk with people, you know, even inside Skylark, it's like, yeah, Zio is not even 1.0, you know, we shouldn't consider that for production systems. And on the other hand, I still hear a lot of companies coming through to Zio, and they consider it for production systems, and there are already companies who are using it. So can you tell me just a bit more about what is the difference between Zio and the previous frameworks? Because we have all different frameworks in the past, in Scala even, right? So we had Akka, we have a whole subset of technologies built by type level. We have Scala Z and all that stuff. So, and you probably know all of them. So, and then there is Zio, new kid on the block, which is, you know, a really strong community, I guess, behind the scenes. And so if you look at this perspective of the horizon, all of these frameworks and things you have on the plate, and what was the reason why you choose Zio against, I don't know, Akka or other frameworks?
Absolutely. I think the way we look at it is that every technology is designed to solve a very specific problem.
Okay.
And I think Akka ecosystem, they're designed to solve a problem that is not really relevant to us at this stage. We used Akka a lot before, but then we realized that it is not a technology that we needed. Same goes with other Scala libraries and type level as well. And I think the Zio gives us ability to apply FP to high level design and architecture, which basically allows you to reduce complexity while you're increasing testability and maintainability of your system. And this might sound like buzzwords, but if it actually comes down to helping you build a better system. And I think we came from, we started with Akka ecosystem, then we moved to type level and final tagless, and moved to Zio. And we have this very good experience of knowing what's best for us. And especially when it comes to functional programming languages, you need to find a sweet spot how functional you want to go, because 100% functional programming or pure functional programming doesn't actually work. And that's why Scala and Zio is such a good match, because Zio uses Scala's functional programming side and object-oriented side and finds that sweet spot. That makes you very productive. And then there are some non-technical aspects to choosing this language. It makes introducing Zio to your team is much easier. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an ability to break down the problem into smaller problems and then solving them individually. And the beauty comes when you start composing these solutions into a new solution. And then the composition and abstraction gives you this ability to reuse code across your code base and across your team members. And that's where you start to get efficiency and speed in building your software. And it's not only you're building software quicker, but you're building higher quality software as well. The thing with Xeo that we learned was that it makes your code base consistent. So we had experience when hiring new developers, for instance, and asking them to, okay, so you're gonna work on this feature, please be as functional as possible. And the thing with Scala is that it is really hard to enforce functional programming because you can do things that compiler will allow you to do, unlike Haskell. But if you start doing Xeo, like it forces your developers to be functional. So you don't need to worry about that problem anymore. And you don't need your team members to be disciplined to stick with functional programming. And in startups, lack of discipline is the main problem. So I think that's what I found about Xeo when we started building the software.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. So if I try to digest them a bit, it's taking also into account what I know from other interviews and from my own experience is that Scala itself started from university background. So it is very scientific approach. You have to know category theory and all of these libraries that were like CATS and Scala Z, they were and they are still, when it comes to their usage, you are coming from the scientific approach rather than from the business approach. And it seems quite fair, but from the perspective of onboarding new people to the project and making the project and developing the project in a good pace, it requires quite senior employees, senior engineers to be onboarded so they can grasp all of these concepts that are not so easy to understand. And when I know from other people when I talk about Xeo is that, of course, it still is functional and it still allows you to benefit all of these functional programming values, but it's much easier to onboard people, you know, on the project and let them work from the business perspective, look at the code rather than from the how to make this code working using all of these scientific things that we have to know about. Okay, it works. It works, it's great because we use all of this knowledge, but who cares actually? In the end of the day, no one cares about how sexy this line of code is. Yeah. People care about whether the code is performing, whether development speed is good, whether there are errors within the code base and how the system works in a high load case. These are the reasons why people build the systems. So that's at least how I see that Xeo helps to switch, to move a bit the needle from educational and scientific approach to more business focused.
I can see that. The thing with some other competing FP frameworks is that they somehow try to enforce Haskell type of approach to Scala, which is fine, but I think Scala has. So the main goal of functional programming is, composition and reusability of code. Like you want to reuse code as much as possible. And Scala has additional features like subtyping that like Haskell doesn't have, for instance, that allows you to reuse code in different ways. And I think Xeo somehow brings and also there are some patterns in object-oriented programming, like in Java, for instance, that also tries to reuse certain aspects of the code, of your code base. And I think Zeo tries to kind of combine all these different tools into one, and Scala is like a perfect platform for it. So
we all are enjoying the Scala world, so it's great to have it on board. However, do you think that you would use Scala for every project you have on in mind, or it's like for some things I would use different languages, and Scala is just, you know, or not just, but it has its own niche, but it's not for everything. What is your take on that? Is this language that is so universal? Yeah. Or
I think it is not a universal language, but every problem needs to be addressed individually. But the principles that Scala preaches, I think, should be applied to every problem. And from kind of a server sort of backend perspective, I think I would use Scala in 90% of the cases. But if there's something more like embedded systems and something that requires more efficiency and speed, I think there are other options which I'm not experienced with that considered to be better and faster. But I believe there are technologies now that even based on Scala, that for instance, Scala Native, that also try to kind of solve those type of problems. But in general, it depends on who is trying to build the software. So for startups, I'll definitely, in a startup environment, I'll definitely go for Scala because it allows you to quickly build and iterate high quality software. For enterprises, they probably want to use Scala as well, but they have so many restrictions and legacy code and policies, and I think it's not doesn't just come down to technology. There are also other sort of human based factors as well.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to say that Scala is a universal language, but I think the trend is clear now that Scala is becoming more and more mature. It's not a hype language anymore, and especially the functional programming side is sort of making Scala popular, and Scala is making functional programming popular.
Yeah,
which is it's just good to see.
I agree. When it comes to Scala language, there is one major reason why CTOs that I'm talking with are rejecting it. And it's because of the talent pool. So that if you look for, you know, scaling up the team by 20 people and your system is written in, I don't know, Java or even different language like Python, then you can find some engineers, you know, in the same city. And when you look at Scala talent pool, then, you know, it will be much harder for you to find engineers nearby who are experienced with it.
Yeah.
Isn't not something that, you know, you are worried about as well, or what is your
thing? Yes, I think hiring, I think there's two aspects to that. First of all, Scala and functional programming attracts high quality engineers from my experience. So that's a good thing. So you shouldn't be afraid of that. So essentially you would need to hire less people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're higher quality because for some reason, I guess the functional programming is in fashion now and it attracts a talent pool that is interested, not just in money, but also not just what they build, but how they build it.
I get it.
And I think they should embrace a remote, the remote kind of hiring as well. And the agencies like that specialize in Scala are actually the perfect way to get your team up to kind of speed with Scala. So
yeah,
that's how we saw them.
Actually, we see in Zio the chance for Scala community to grow, because other libraries are really great and they brought a lot of value to Scala. But when we look at from the perspective of future, how companies are approaching functional programming world, they are considering Kotlin, they are considering different languages, not only Scala. And from my observation is that Kotlin is great for people who are familiar with Java and they want to keep that kind of path. And they want to get rid of some old flavor that Java has and do some new stuff on top of it. But compare that to Scala and Zio, because the other frameworks are really great, but they, as I mentioned, they are quite hard to onboard people into. And when we look from that perspective, Zio and other frameworks or libraries, then it gets this one extra sweet spot that was missing, I think, to make companies consider Scala for the next projects because of this onboarding experience. That okay, it's great. You told me a lot about Scala. It's great. Let's use it in some trial project, and then they start typing, and oh, these old libraries are quite magical. Let's learn that magic, and it brings a lot of uncertainty. That I don't feel good enough to use this language. I don't feel good enough to use these libraries. So I think going from the perspective of talent pool, this could also help in finding more people willing to work on your project, because they actually will learn Scala, but they will learn it through the easier path than the past, the Zio path. So probably that could be the thing to consider. I also know that you it's not enough. Zio has a great library, but it's not enough. You use GraphQL in your project. So
yeah. Yes, I mean, GraphQL it's been around for some time, but I think since Facebook made it public in 2015, we've been monitoring this technology for some time, and we thought, okay, this is a perfect opportunity to use it now. And actually, it is a very powerful language, so you kind of need to know what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. It's not designed for every situation. But in our case, I think, and especially for startups, it kind of comes back to the same principles that we look for in a technology, like type safety and reusability and abstraction. And this is what sort of GraphQL provides. I think it, and for startups, it's an ability to also add new features quickly. So when you compare it with the REST API, for instance, it's much easier to release new versions of your sort of client or your server without breaking your breaking changes in your system. And one thing we noticed was, well, the main reason why we started looking at this technology was the fact that it provides you to kind of reduce the size of your payload. So there was less data now transmitted between the client and the server. And for us, this was very important. And I think the reusable abstraction is one of the sort of core concepts of GraphQL. You need to define pieces of data in your graph and how they relate to each other. And the client side or consumer can then represent these pieces however they want. And this obviously means that you reuse a lot of what you've written, so you don't need to add new access points to your database, your server, like you would do in the REST API, for instance. But I think if you come back to sort of Scala and Zio, you'd see that, so our core problem was that we lacked type safety across our system. So the backend was type safe and everything was hunky-dory, but sort of external systems or client-side systems interacting with our server was not type safe. And actually we spent most time testing the integration with these systems, and it took a lot of our resources. But GraphQL now allows us to chain different multiple services together in a sort of type safe manner, and this means that we can detect issues and bugs before deploying code. And if you're basically type safe from the database layer all the way to the client side browser, this increases your productivity like tenfold. Yeah. And every CTO knows that earlier you detect bugs, cheaper it is.
Yeah, it's when you know what you want to build, right? Because that's why you started with you know, different set of features. You had broader context of the system, and you decided to rewrite it to actually, because you learn enough to know better what you need, right? So that's kind of the reason. I'm really thankful for this explanation about GraphQL, because I was not looking from the type safety point of view on that approach, but I think it's very, very valid. In general, when you build a long-lasting systems, right, you have to think from that perspective, because you don't build it for just 1 week, but it will stay for long. And that's actually something I'm thinking about at Scalac, is that there are so many startups that are approached by, you know, advisors. They usually don't have strong technical background, the startups. They have some business background that brings them a motivation to build a new product. And then they are approached by different technical advisors who tell them, yeah, let's just build your MVP in a lightweight framework, say, you know, Ruby on Rails, or Python, yeah, Django, whatsoever. And then they say, yes, that's great. You have these guys all around the world. Let's build it. And that's actually, I think, but that's my question to you. I pivoted a bit from our discussion on GraphQL, because that's also in the context of the right decision, what technology to choose in the right state of your system. And that's what I wanted to talk with you about a bit, is your take on that. Is that when you are starting your company and your first version of a product, you might not know much and you want to iterate a lot, and you have Scala background, so you pick that language because it was quite relatively easy to build an MVP with that technology for you. But of course, there are many entrepreneurs on outside, and they are every day thinking what I should do to build a new product. My take on that is that if you don't know much about your product, try to build as less as you can, because as if you build too much, you actually don't even know what you measure, right? So it's really hard to measure. Mm-hmm. But when you know better what you want to build, then I do think that you have to realize that you are not building for 1 month, but for 2 or 3 years from now. And then what I was trying to nail is kind of a scalable MVP approach. Like, you don't build it for minimum viable product is not enough. It's, you have to think about building a minimum viable product, but open to scale for the future, right? So that's kind of my take on that. Is this what you, the reason why you choose these technologies for this version of the product?
Exactly, that's the key. I think I've known many entrepreneurs who actually have a very long experience of building software, but they have never actually managed to build a system because of the approach that you just described, that, okay, well, let's build an MVP or let's see if it works. Oh, it works. There's a demand for it, but oh my God, you know, it's such a bad product. We need to throw it away, or we need to do something else. Or there is no demand for it. Okay, let's throw it away. Let's build a new MVP. And they start this process from over and over again, which I think it's more of a philosophical sort of debate, a question. I think the fact is you need, in order to be fast, I think key is time to market. You need to deliver some kind of feature as quickly as possible. And some say, oh, do not worry about the quality. But I think the way you deliver this feature is not by actually building it, by reusing things. And what's the best technology we know that allows you to reuse things is, functional programming. And you need to reuse things that is so it's tested and it works well. Not, you shouldn't like build something that is might not work, because we've been into a situation that, okay, we've published our product, but it is not stable enough. So we lost a lot of clients because of that, and we damaged our reputation because of that. So that's why Scala and sort of Zio is such a good tool for startups, because it allows you to, there is a steep learning curve, but then it allows you to quickly build products and quickly iterate it. And I don't believe in move fast, break thing kind of approach that has been popularized. I think you should build fast, but you should build smart. You should reuse things. You should, it's like functional programming is like Lego. You try to compose different solutions into what you need, instead of building things from scratch.
Yes. And when you look from the perspective of the past, you know, experience with on that project, because you had to decide about rewriting it, which is really a serious decision. It's like telling yourself that you did something wrong, right? It's like, I have to throw this to the trash bin and write a new thing. So, yeah. I find it very hard for startups to make such decisions, especially when they get some seed rounds in the beginning. Then they are pushed by the, you know, investors who are already in to deliver their promises, right? Because they actually are sending some pitch decks and they show these nice hockey sticks in the slides. Yeah. And then they don't want to go back to the investors and tell them, well, you know, we have to redo the whole system and we might not be ready with the product for next year. So how you cope with that? Because that's kind of your reality you had, right? And you are in. So
what? Yeah, that was a big problem. I mean, it almost kind of broke us because there is clearly a demand for our product. And the fact that we had to rewrite it means that our product was not good enough. And essentially we lost time because of that. And we lost customers because of that. So if we had built our product correctly from the first place, mainly the backend side, it would have been a totally different story. But because there is a demand for our product, I was able to justify that, okay, let's offer them this new, more stable product. Sometimes you miss your boat. Your competition takes all the demand. But that's why it is important to build correctly in the first place. And to be honest, we are at a very early stage anyway. The industry is still very, very, very young. So that's why our sort of next iteration is not only built correctly, but it's also modular. So it allows us to test different things, test the new features, extend in certain ways quickly, so that customers, so we can quickly satisfy customer demand.
Yes, it was. I still think it's very uncommon to say such things. You know, it's people, especially CTOs, people who are on C-level. It's very hard to take a step back and look from the perspective on the market that we don't have to be first with that product, but we have to be the best. Like with Facebook, that was not first social network, but now is the primary social network we are using. Of course, this example is very obvious and maybe not applicable in every business case, because you know there are specific specifics of Facebook that we don't have in your project. But in general, I fully agree with that approach. And if you have a chance to do things in the right way, and even step one, make a one step back and think, I know how to make this step better and redo it, I would say, yeah, try it, because you might end up with something that you will use for years. So it's very hard for you to just, you know, keep things improving and it crashes and improving and crashes, or you have to feel that it's a good base for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And then now the problem we have is how should we migrate our existing customers to this new product? Because not only technologically, but also these customers have now integrated their system to our old system. Wow. In different ways, human ways as well, because they're used to using it basically. And this new system comes out, it's better, it's quicker, it's faster, it's more scalable, but they're not used to it. How are you gonna migrate them? So you might lose them. So that is another reason why you want to get things right initially.
I guess this is something you like, right? You wouldn't go that path if you wouldn't like these kind of things, right? So it's,
yeah, I think yes, but it must be motivated by the business as well. And it was clear that the business, the market demanded high quality, scalable product, a product that is simple enough for small businesses to use, but also scalable enough for the enterprises to use as well. And because it is justifiable by the business, we can afford to do this. And yeah, I think as a startup, you should always strive to make your product as high quality as possible. So yeah, I see, it's a risky decision, but I don't see any reason why not to do it. But Matt, thank you very much. This was very interesting. I'm always happy to talk about our software, and especially the technologies we use. And Scalac has been invaluable help for us. And thank you for all the contributions that you guys are doing to Zio and the Scala community. It helped not only our startup, but some other startups that I'm personally in touch with. This was a very interesting conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Zukams. Have a great time and see you online.
Thank you.
Bye.